welcome to another episode of Lie, Cheat, and Steal, a bi-monthly podcast about liars, frauds, thieves, and bullshitters. My name is Pat Royce. You can also find us on Twitter at LCS Podcast. We're also on TikTok at Lie, Cheat, Steal Podcast. And if you like what you hear, please leave us a five-star review wherever you're listening to this, or you can subscribe to our Patreon, where we release two more episodes every month. That's at patreon.com/liecheatandsteal. That being said, as always, I'm here with my co-host, broadcasting live from beautiful, fiery New York, Kath Barbadoro. How you doing, Kath?
Hi, I'm good. Yeah, we're recording this in the midst of the New York smoke apocalypse. Our whole city is getting hotboxed by Canadian pine trees. I will say, like, it's definitely bad. It's especially if you have, like, asthma or something. It's really terrible. I kind of like how it smells. I think it smells kind of good. I don't know. Like,
hey,
I'm just a weirdo.
You like what you like, you know? Like, I think gas smells good.
Right. It's the same kind of like perverse good smell as like gas, where it's like it a little bit smells like burning garbage, but also it's like kind of good. I don't know. I like it. I can't wait until it's clear though, because like I've been updating the podcast about my roller skating journey.
Yes.
And I was going to go out today. I was going to roller skate today, and I couldn't go out because it's too gross outside. So tragic.
That's the real tragedy of climate change. Mm-hmm. I can't roller skate. Now what?
I can't. Yeah. Yeah. So how are you? How are you doing?
I am good. Out here in Texas. Not on fire. It feels like it, though.
Weirdly. Yeah. Weirdly, yeah. It's sort of switched. I feel like fires like this were way more common when I lived in Texas, but
you guys
are safe.
But I'm doing good. Been off the road, working construction, and definitely actually kind of liking it. You know, I get up in the morning, I go to work, I get off, I do shows. It's fun. It's cool.
Domestic
I'm enjoying
life.
Central Texas. Yeah. It's good. I'm not just grinding out the road. And now like stuff like career stuff is happening more because I'm back in the city. So, you know, apparently not a lot to be gained by driving around the middle of the country for 3 months at a time. So,
I mean, one thing I was really struck by the last time I was in Austin was, you know, the scene has changed quite a bit since the pandemic. You know, Rogan moved there. A bunch of those guys came. People have been opening comedy clubs all over. But it seems like all it's meant is that every comic in the town who's halfway decent can get paid. Like,
yeah,
people really, you know, not enough to live on necessarily, but like I was there in March and I was trying to find somebody to do a guest spot on my show, and everyone I could think of had paying spots and they couldn't come.
Yeah.
And I was this is a good problem, you know, like,
yeah.
It can be all right.
Like, yeah. At the very, there's been some, headlined, I don't like throw anybody's financials out there, but I headlined a show recently that I was like, oh, whatever, I'll see something, a little something in my Venmo. And I saw a lot more of a little something than I thought I was going to see in my Venmo.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, yeah. And there, now, like, also with Venmo, you can just be like, hey, here's our little, our little QR code, tip the comics. And that, like, that pulls in some crazy numbers sometimes. So
yeah.
It's certainly a town thirsty for comedy, and it's a rocket ride that's never going to end.
Nope.
And it's a bubble that's never going to break.
Yep.
And it's going to be great.
Infinite demand.
Ever. Yes. Well, speaking about just the lovely area of Central Texas, where I call home, I know, it has a special place in your heart.
Near and dear to me. Absolutely. Yes. Although I did just realize I hit 6 years in New York last week. And that is only 1 year less than the time I spent in Austin, which is pretty crazy.
When that happens, like I technically, the time period that I lived in my hometown, which is like formative of my years, my entire personage, my beliefs, mm-hmm. and like everything, I was baked in there. Was we got there in 1998 and I left in 2008. It was only 10 years. I've been in Austin longer.
Wow. Yeah,
it's very strange because that's just such a formative.
That's why you're
time.
Woke now. That's why you're woke now. Yeah. You got infected with the woke mind virus.
The woke mind virus. Austin. Yeah, I do. I've just been respecting people. It's insane. It needs to stop. I do like that I'm doing construction again because it's like a Trump card that people are like,
literally.
Oh, you fucking pussy. Yeah. It's like people talk shit. It's like, dude, I'm covered in sawdust right now. What are you doing?
I'm a tradesperson, motherfucker. Yeah. Like, how dare you? You don't have to wear boots like I wear to work.
Although I still work at Air Maxes.
That's how you know. God, Pat, you need to get in a union because you should not be working in Air Maxes. OSHA is having a field day on your construction projects. Yeah.
What's funny is about like the people not working or saying they're not working. We've mentioned a comedian in the past, not by name, but an anti-vax guy who's just, you know, that's their thing now. And they have a whole new TikTok out about where it was like, oh, Gen Z, when they have to work 3 hours, they're just like, no, oh, they're like melting stuff. And it's like, dude, I know you. You're from a rich family in Fairfield, Connecticut. You've never had a job in your life. What would you do if you had to work 3 hours,
right,
sir? What if you just didn't edit TikToks for a living, you piece of shit? losing focus here. So
I know I ruined your segue. I apologize.
No. I trust me, girl. I love nothing more than to talk about other shit. If something's not the subject at hand, I'm down to talk about it. So Central Texas. I thought, you know, you think you know everything about a place, and then you just stumble across a story that blows your mind. So this one is about from 20 years ago, and it's about a young couple here in Central Texas, and it just, I was like, wow, I was right out of high school when this happened. I never heard about it. It's an insane story. Let's dive right in.
Let's do it.
So we're going back June 18th, 2004.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure I know where I was, and I was like 90 miles from this when it was happening. It's June 18th, 2004, on a backcountry road in Burnett County, Texas. Texas Department of Public Safety Officer William Telemontes is responding to a 911 call about a vehicle on fire at the bottom of an embankment.
Damn.
It's a late 90s model Chevy Cavalier. It's burnt out, reduced to a husk of its former glory. You know, the full glory of a late 90s model Chevy Cavalier.
Right.
it sucks to see it taken down a peg or two.
Hate to see it.
This thing was torched. The wheels were fucking melted.
Wow.
There was 12 pounds of ash in the driver's seat. And so the driver's
seat.
That's
like, I would guess, about how much ash a human would produce, right?
I would think so. Yeah. You get cremated, and that's, 12 pounds, you know? You got to weigh it, though, because if it comes back short, then you got to confront the guy.
Yeah.
Hey, where's 3 ounces of my grandma, motherfucker?
Skimming off the top? What's going on here?
Yeah. The dude just has, like, ash around his nose. He's like, why? Nah, man, I don't know what you're talking about.
Why is there laxative in my grandma's cremains? What's going on here?
Look at that. They're just numbing your grandma's ashes. Like, oh, no, don't feel right, bro. So this is the last remnants of the person who clearly drove the car off the cliff. So immediate questions. Is it a drunk driver? Maybe a tired motorist who dozed off while navigating the winding rural roads?
A Thelma and Louise, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it was two friends sticking together to the end. Authorities quickly traced the vehicle to Clayton Wayne Daniels, a 24-year-old
resident. Great Central Texas name.
Yeah.
Not two first names, three first names.
Yeah. Three first names, yeah. Clayton Wayne Daniels, yeah. So a 24-year-old resident of nearby Leander, Texas. What up, Leander? It's like for people who are in Austin, that's like, this might as well be the same fucking city. You know, like,
yeah,
it's like Leander
it's an inner ring northern suburb, I would say.
I consider it North Austin to a degree. It's basically
pretty much
the same.
Yeah.
So police arrive at the residence where Clayton's 21-year-old wife, Molly, lived with the couple's daughter and her son from previous marriage. The daughter was named Harley, like the motorcycle.
Cool.
Because,
very cool.
Her dad, Clayton, was a mechanic, and he loved motorcycles, so he named his daughter Harley. So according to Molly, she tells the people, she's like, oh, shit, yeah, Clayton took the Cavalier the night before to visit his mom, and he hadn't gotten back yet. And apparently he never would, because the ash was sent to the medical examiner in Austin, who concluded that they indeed were the remains of Clayton Daniels. So,
R.I.P.
Yeah, R.I.P. Clayton. Big Clay. In the following days, the community of Leander, Texas, rallied together to provide assistance for the recently widowed Molly. See, Clayton had worked at as an auto mechanic, and Molly performed receptionist duties for a local home remodeling company. So it was a very working-class couple.
Mm-hmm.
They lacked financial security. You know, they're paycheck to paycheck as it was.
Early 20s with two kids is a tough.
Yeah.
Tough way to live.
Yes. I know friends now who have like come out of the other side of that. I think usually when you have kids, you pull it together, generally.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But like some people don't, you know?
Well, and it's but, like, I mean, you pull it together, maybe you're more responsible, but like if you don't money's have money, you don't have money, you know?
Yeah,
you
exactly.
You could still give your kid a good childhood, but you're fucking stressed out. Like, that's tough.
Yeah, and you might pull it together. You might come out of it now you're in your 30s. The kids are a little older. You've had your stability. But yeah, those early 20s years are tough. You know, especially because, like, when you're 20, you're in your early 20s, like, you're still having fun. And no matter how responsible you are as a 23-year-old mother, you probably still got a friend you fucking drink with. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, you're not just completely chilling. So the community began to pull together to assist Molly and her two children and with their monthly bills, which are coming due. And a memorial service was held in Burnet, Texas, where Clayton grew up. And instead of hymns, they played the song Freebird by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
R.I.P., dude. This guy's cool.
Yeah. Clayton, complex.
He went out the way that a guy who gets Freebird played at their funeral is gonna go out. Like, and has a daughter named Harley because he worked on motorcycles. Like, yeah, you go out in a fiery wreck.
Wreck and a Chevy Cavalier.
Absolutely. You know, like,
the official car of driving back from a drug dealer's house. And you would think that makes it the official car of driving to a drug dealer's house. And in a lot of cases, it is. But it's two different things.
Yeah.
And then, the Cavalier is the one you take home. And so Clayton hadn't worked in the months leading up to his death. Instead, he had stayed at home and watched over Haley, and Caleb is the name of the son. And so Molly had explained to Caleb that the man he called dad, I believe, and it wasn't his biological father, but he was like, he was on the scene. He was the dad that stepped up.
Absolutely.
But now he's the dad that stepped out to go get a pack of smokes in heaven.
Yeah.
I didn't think about this detail. Like the kid's dad was a mechanic, and young Caleb, they're like, hey, daddy had to go to heaven. And he said, he was like, well, where's the car? Like, what about the car? Like, they were like,
what about that Cavalier, man?
Yeah, what that's about that Cavalier? Mom, I got fucking errands to run. Okay. I have to drive.
He
drove his
car to heaven, like the end of Greece. That's what it was.
That's exactly what they tell him. They said he needed the car to get to heaven.
That's true.
And it's the car for driving home from the drug dealer's house and to heaven.
And to heaven,
So the couple had taken out an insurance policy on Clayton 2 years prior, but it would be months until it paid off. And in the meantime, Molly would need childcare as her and Clayton had settled into an arrangement where the out-of-work Clayton would watch the kids while Molly worked. And there was a neighbor by the name of Jenna, and she reached an agreement to watch Caleb and Harley while Molly continued her job as a receptionist at the home improvement firm. So they decided on $120 a week, and then Jenna took on the babysitting duties to assist Molly. Jenna actually didn't know Molly. She had never met her before, but Molly had reached out and was like, hey, I need babysitting help, and put like a flyer up, and she saw the flyer.
Gotcha.
And answered it. So yeah, the community got together, you know, and made things happen. So Molly gets back to work, and then investigators get to work analyzing the crash. Now, William Telemontes, the guy that the original DPS officer that pulled up, he was put off by the lack of tire skid marks that are normally present when a car drives off the road. Furthermore, the fire seemed to have like originated from the driver's seat itself, where Clayton had been driving, not from the engine or the gas tank.
Okay, and here's my plausible theory. He fell asleep, hence no skid marks, with a lit cigarette in his mouth. Hence the
jamming
fire.
Jamming Freebird. Just ash like that long off his mouth. Yep. And he's like, I'm as free as a bird now. And this bird is not away. I had roughly the same time as this. A friend of mine was on Xanax and crashed his car through a house that nobody lived at, thank God.
Thank God,
There was a cleaning lady there, but she was upstairs. He woke up to her banging on the window and yelling at him.
Oh, my God.
So we, like, crazy enough, it made the front paper of the Copper's Cove Leader Press, front page of the paper. But what was, like, a little crazy was that they started thinking about it. Mike drove a standard, and this was at the end of a cul-de-sac street, or a keyhole street. We talked about in the last episode. At the end of a keyhole street that was, like, a mile and a half long. It was uphill the entire last eight blocks, and it was the very top house at the end of this thing. He's driving a standard. He had to shift to like get it. What was he doing? Like he was just like no, this road goes. It goes through.
Instinct took over. Yeah.
Yeah.
He just knew, you know.
Yeah. And the next day, he read the police report and realized that Xanax was not spelled with a Z. He told us that. He's like, bro, I saw.
He learned a valuable lesson that day.
He was like, I said, what the fuck is Xanax?
Sounds like a guy who drives his car through a house. This all tracks.
Yeah, that notable house driver through her, that guy. kind of a key part of his personality. So it seemed to Telemontes that the body had been dead before being placed in the car, alluding to foul play. But, you know, who would kill Daniels, right? So they had a look at it. And it wouldn't turn out, however, that there was a short list of people that wanted Clayton Daniels dead. He really wasn't a popular guy. Much like my friend who drove the car through the house, Clayton was a loose cannon who started fights with neighbors and instigated confrontations. One of the neighbors told a story about how it was Molly's coworker decided to do something nice for Molly. And she was like, I'm going to pay for you to have a night out. And I'm going to pay. And so that she was like, you can go treat her to dinner and watch their, and said, you can drop the kids off at the house. I'll watch the kids. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, it's really cool. So they go there, and there's a neighbor, like, bumping music, and Clayton decides that he's going to confront the neighbor about his loud music, and it just, like, turns into, like, a huge fucking fight, ruins the night for everybody.
Yeah.
Like, someone bought you dinner and watched your kids. There would be a me-shaped puff of smoke. Thank you. Pew! And it would just be gone. Like,
That's someone dedicated to ruining everyone's night. That's dedication. Yeah.
It's like, bro, I will be back at the last possible minute plus 15 minutes. You're like, if we agreed at 12, I'll be home at 12. I'll be here at 12:15.
Right.
Sorry, not sorry. I hate guys like that. I love that I live in Austin now and I hang out with people who do make believe and do characters for fun.
Theater people.
I grew up with guys like this, and they're the worst people of all time. They make everything not fun. It's always a problem. You can't bring them anywhere. And that was kind of Clayton. So they were like, man, so they started thinking maybe a confrontation on the road had escalated to his murder. Because they said he was a road rage guy too. You know, he was, he's everything you think he is. And he's just like the kind of guy who would like follow somebody on the road. There was already a story where somebody was like, yeah, one time he fucking cut a guy off in traffic. They went for like eight blocks, like flipping the bird at each other and shit. And so
this is an angry young man for sure.
Yeah. He's as free as a bird, Kat. And that's the thing is this bird has no social skills. So all these angles were considered not only by law enforcement, but also by a private investigator employed by the insurance company by the name of, hot name alert, Clark Dickenshite.
Yes, Dickenshite. Man, that guy went through a gauntlet as a child. He was forged in the fires of middle school. Dickenshite. Good for him.
Yeah, diamond skin. You cannot... You can't say anything to Shitty Dick Clark that he has not already heard.
This is a cool customer. This is no wonder he became a PI. Like he's the opposite of Clayton. He is like impossible to rattle. This guy.
Yeah. The Claytons of the world were, you know, they had their time with Clark Dickenshite, and now he knows how they work. He understands them, and he's in a position to take them down.
Yes.
So. Yeah. 2 years ago, Dickenshite had sold the Daniels the $100,000 life insurance policy that Molly stood to cash in on. So Clark conducted an interview with Molly and was put off by her lack of emotion. Mm. Everybody grieves differently, you know, but like sometimes you're just, you know, stuff doesn't make any sense. I grieve appallingly. I cry aloud. You know, so everybody, yeah. So if I ever do anything wrong and I'm not acting like that, you know, I did it. So.
I'm more of a weirdo. I feel like I would raise suspicion in my grief just because I'm like, I do I hold it together until I see the other living people grieving, and then I lose it. Like, that's when I can kind of internalize, but then as soon as I see other people's outpouring emotion, so like if you were crying, then I would be waterworks, you know.
I do have to warn you, there's one part that there's a detail later in the story that did make me cry when I was researching it. Aww. And I was looking at the thing today, and I might tear up a little bit. It's a very tragic twist in the story. So
good for you for being a crier. I like am so pro men crying. It's like it's the best. That's like my I am so grateful I was raised with a crying dad. Like my dad
Me
is
too.
Yeah, my dad is such a soft touch. Like he will definitely tear up like more than my mom. Like I've seen my dad cry more than my mom. I think that's great. Men, cry it out, dudes.
I'm so glad I got that. My dad was I want to say like just the pinnacle of not the pinnacle, but a very good example of positive masculinity.
Yeah.
My dad, like when people would be like, "Oh, my dad could beat up your dad." Like, no, my dad like used to like tournament fucking karate fighting. He was in the military. He could work on cars. He knew about all that shit. Didn't like also would cry. Was like a totally normal, approachable dude.
In touch
like
with his emotions. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a Clayton.
Yeah, not a Clayton at all. Yeah. Everybody got out of the military. He bought a Camaro, and he got the 6-cylinder, and he would not get his own oil changed. He would go to take his oil change, and his boys would give him shit. I got the 6-cylinder. My dad, like, I know guys that would buckle. He'd be like, "Well, I got the 6 because, you know, this, that. I got to change the oil. I'm busy." Da, da, da. My dad didn't give a shit. He was like, "I just wanted the fucking car. I got the 6, and I got the automatic because I don't like shifting." What'd he say? "I don't want to shift gears. I want to drive a Camaro. That's all I want to do.
God bless
I just
want to
be in the fucking Camaro."
I don't got to prove shit to you. I got my Camaro. Yeah. I'm happy.
Yeah, fuck off. They were like, "Oh, you don't change your own oil." But I was like, "I changed oil for 22 years in the fucking army." Although I'm sure he wasn't changing oil the whole fucking time. But there was a very formative period of his service where he was changing oil. And he taught me that it's completely okay to not be that guy.
Hell
and,
yeah.
Shout out to Pops. So another guy, another Mitch, Dick and Shite, is out here. And he said that, you know, Molly showed a lack of emotion. And people close to Molly had noticed it too. One night, a few weeks after the incident, while being taken out of the town by friends, Molly asked what was the appropriate time for her to start dating again.
I mean, she's got to find someone to help her take care of these kids. So I guess she's practical.
Exactly.
She's practical.
Yeah. You got there's a clock ticking. You know what I'm saying? You got to get in there. You got to lock somebody down. Yeah. Also, it's like her friends, like, they seem a little judgmental. They definitely seem like some girls from Leander. Because at one point, one of them was just like, "We took her out to the bar one night." And she's like, "What's the best time to start dating?" And we were all like, "What?" And it was like, "Y'all took her to the bar. Like, what is she like?"
Right.
You know, so, yeah. Like, what's the point of that? Like, you know, you're going to go meet somebody. Go out and have fun. But, you know. So her friends, maybe not the best people. But so one night, a few weeks after the incident, then Molly's babysitter began hearing about a new man in her life from Molly's son, Caleb. So Caleb would talk at length about a guy named Jake. And when he wasn't talking about Jake, he was acting like Jake. And he's like, "Me and Jake do this. Me and Jake wrestle. We have all this fun. And Jake. And the babysitter was like, "Okay, cool." She was like, "I thought it was a little weird she was dating already and that he had met her kid," which completely true. That, you know.
I feel a new boyfriend who wrestles with the son of the woman, like, that to me is like raises some red flags. It's like, you don't want the new boyfriend roughhouse with
wrestle
the kid.
With the kid. Yeah.
That's a little bit of a pervert signal to me.
Yeah. And you gotta stage like the meeting of like so my ex Priscilla had two kids, but we knew each other since we were in eighth grade. We were like in the same social circle pretty much the whole time. And then out of high school, it intensified. We hung out with the same people like out of high school. And then years later we got together. So I knew her. She knew me.
Sure.
I met her kids fairly early. But yeah, you just be bringing people in, you know, like, and this is like within 30 days of her husband dying.
Yeah. And that's all that stuff together is a lot. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. If you want to have, like, you know, if there's somebody that, you know, slides in after 8 and slides out before 6, you know what I'm saying? Like do your thing. Like, but if somebody's on the scene like that, that'll be a little problematic. So also the kid Caleb starts acting out. He starts getting really physically aggressive with everybody in his class. He starts peeing everywhere. They said he was peeing on the walls in the classroom. Mm. Yeah, just kind of acting out. So they confronted Molly about it with these developments. And Molly told the babysitter that, look, Jake's just a friend. And Caleb is merely acting out his frustration from losing his dad. You know, the man he called dad.
Yeah.
So this sort of checked out until one morning Molly's car needed a jump from her house. Remember, she lived in the same neighborhood as the babysitter because she had answered a flyer that she had put up.
Yep.
So Molly's car needed a jump, and her and homegirl are outside trying to figure it out. And she was like, you know, they didn't know how to hook up battery cables. And so Jake just comes out the house in the boxer shorts, 7 a.m., you know, like they're way too early. And old girl in the interview that I was watching, she was like, and he seemed kind of low class. Earlier she said he seemed kind of like trailer trash. And then she admitted that was classist. Like all the same. So she goes,
wow, yeah, yeah. Like,
this is like discriminatory like to class, but he seemed like trailer trash. And I was like, well, I guess you checked all the boxes. You can say whatever you want now.
you've done the prerequisite disclosure. Yeah. That also seems very Leander to me. Is like feeling bad about it, but also calling someone trailer trash.
Right. It's like, it's just kind of funny. It's like, I guess you say whatever you want now. Like, you know, but also like you live in Leander, shut up. So meanwhile, the investigation into Clayton's death had fallen into the lap of the legendary Texas Rangers. Why'd I write legendary? I don't like them. but they are legendary. I will say that. Texas Rangers. Yeah. The analysis of the body had determined that Clayton had no soot in his lungs. So, implying that he had been dead before his car caught ablaze.
So I'd imagine he's not a pile of ashes at this point. He was a burnt up corpse, so they could do an autopsy on him.
Yeah, there was something. So they say pile of ashes, but they also said no soot in the lungs. So right.
There must be something they can test.
Maybe it's like the lung is like, it was like a shell and they can look inside. And I don't know. But they figure it out. But they had also, the medical examiner in Austin had said, this is Clayton Daniels. They released that report.
Yeah.
So charcoal lighter fluid was found to have been soaked in the driver's seat, making it the hottest area in the car based on burn evidence. Mm-hmm. Also, the thing about driver's seats is they don't normally burst into flames because there's not, you know, igniting things on driver's seats.
Not a usual place to have soaked in lighter fluid.
Yeah. Accelerant, that's what I was looking for.
Generally speaking, if your driver's seat is soaked in accelerant, you make alternative arrangements for transportation. Just like starting that up, you know?
Oh, man, I had a tire blowout on the last tour that I was on, and the opener kid was like, so I was like, I'm going to throw a donut on this, I'm going to get us to the next show, and then tomorrow I'm going to swap it out. And he was like, it's like 4 hours to the next show. I was like, yeah, it's like whatever. He's like, well, I looked it up. It says you can't drive more than 60 miles on the donut. I was like, bro, that's what they say because they don't want you to party.
Right. Like, you can't. That's like the CDC telling us we shouldn't eat medium rare beef. Like, come on. We'll be fine.
Yeah, it's like, bro, I don't know where you grew up. I know people who lived entire years on donuts. Like,
I mean, the worst that happens is the same thing that already happened. Yeah. So, like, what do you want?
Yeah, it's going to be less traumatic because you're not even going as fast because you're on a donut.
Yeah.
So, the investigators decided to approach the accident from the ground up with a fresh start, beginning with the basics. First off, was that Clayton Davis in that driver's seat? Was that even Clayton? You sure about that?
You sure about that?
Yeah. You sure Clayton's the one that's a pile of ash in this year's driver's seat? So detectives were faced with a gruesome task. They had to crack open like a fragment of remaining hip bone in the vehicle in an effort to extract DNA they could analyze. They then submitted the remains to the crime labs to be compared with samples from Clayton's mother and braced themselves for the long wait that is often shortened by popular TV shows such as CSI. I was no wealth of true crime. The amount of times, like, there's rape kits they haven't even looked at yet. Like, nobody's DNA is speeding back unless it's a high-profile thing.
Yeah.
So the process took months. And in the meantime, Molly's friends and family began to ask about Jake, the new man in her life who was the favorite topic of discussion of her son, Caleb. Molly explained that she had met Jake at the same bar she had met Clayton at, and that Jake had actually been really close friends with Clayton.
Oh, okay.
Those two knew each other inside and out. Molly's family hadn't seen much of Jake, and Molly explained that by telling them that Jake's job as a long-haul trucker kept him away for weeks at a time. Of course you haven't seen Jake. He's in Nebraska. Like, how many times do I have to tell you he goes to a different school?
I feel like I would really like a partner that was a long-haul trucker. That sounds good to me. Because, like, I don't need someone in my hair all the time. I like a long break. You come back, we have like a nice week together, then you're gone again. That sounds perfect for me.
Me and Sid did that for like when we first got together. It was like
your touring like, is. You were kind of like a long haul trucker of comedy.
I really was. Same cities and everything. You know.
Yeah.
I went to Zach Brooks one time in a roast. He was like, "Pastor Royce's tour schedule looks like a Sudafed pickup route."
That is a good roast joke.
Yeah, oh, yeah, solid. Yeah, it eviscerated me. I'm just now clawing back from that. But no, yeah, like that was like, and it was kind of good. Like, it sucked, and it's not tenable. Keeping it up for a long time has its problems.
Yeah.
But it was like, I was usually like 6 weeks back, 3 weeks gone. 6 weeks back, mm-hmm, 3 weeks gone. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a little shorter back. And like, that's enough to where like, you know, you're coming back. It's like a special occasion. A little separation makes the heart grow fonder kind of thing. It helps.
Totally.
But then, after a while, it's like, oh, we've developed this entire like back and forth on this weird ebb and flow of when I'm here.
Right. Hard to develop a routine or.
Exactly. Yeah. You're always back. It's like a different era when you're back. It's like, oh, this is the time we're trying this. You know, it's it can get old, but for a while it keeps things fresh. So nothing like getting the hell out of there to make people like you more. So she had said that, so she kept Jake away from the family. Now, meanwhile, the babysitter, Jenna, was starting to lose patience with Caleb. Caleb was acting out again. He's getting aggressive. He's hitting kids. Seems like a kid that bites. That's totally conjecture, complete hearsay.
Sounds
very speculative on my part, but I'm pretty sure a kid's biting. So she gave him the ultimatum. She said, get Caleb help or find a new babysitter. So then, one day, the babysitter, Jenna, gets a knock on the door from a Texas Ranger by the name of Garth Davis. And Garth had finally gotten the DNA results from the crash. And while they didn't tell him who the driver was, it did tell him who the driver wasn't.
Mm.
And it wasn't Clayton Daniels.
That's right.
Yeah, so Davis shared his results with pertinent authorities. One of them was Burnett Chief Detective Captain Paul Nelson. So Nelson had dealt with Daniels on some pretty serious charges in the past, and he decided that it'd be best to speak with Molly Daniels directly. So him and a response team, they set up like a surveillance on her.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up, they saw that she was meeting up with an unidentified male, and they traveled them. The unidentified male picked her up from work, and they were for her lunch break, and they were traveling, and they ended up stopping at a Taco Bell in North Austin. Where all good stories come to an end.
we've probably been to that Taco Bell.
I'm gonna
take a good guess.
Yeah, Taco Bell, Stastny, or something. No, not inside, Rundberg or some shit like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I can imagine all of this going down at a Taco Bell on Rundberg. That makes sense to me.
These dudes hang out at the Rundberg Taco Bell for sure. So they get there and they're there eating. Nelson descended upon Taco Bell, backed by a SWAT team, guns blazing. And
SWAT team at Taco Bell?
The SWAT team at Taco Bell. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you ever seen a SWAT team? I feel like they happen a lot in like Texas.
I have actually. It's pretty crazy. Do you remember when I first moved to Austin? I lived with Jared and Josh at that house on Riverside.
Yeah.
You probably get a party or two at that house.
Mm-hmm.
We were at 1304 Loma Drive. Like right by us was Parker Drive, and we didn't know it was the same street number. 1304 was an apartment complex, so it was like us, our across the street neighbors, and then behind them was this apartment complex.
Was Parker?
Well, one morning at 7:00 a.m., we just hear a flat. Well, we hear like a boom, and we just hear Austin PD SWAT team 1304 Parker open up. 1304 Parker open up. We're waking up, and 1304 Parker sounds a lot like 1304 Loma.
When it's getting yelled through, like, riots here. Yeah.
It was the hallway. Every door opens up. It's me, Jared, Josh. We're sliding in our socks. And everyone's panicking. And then we fucking were like, we all stopped for a second. And we were like, wait, that's not – happening here. We opened the door. There's a whole fucking SWAT response out there.
Holy shit. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I've never seen one. I feel like they happen all the time down there. So it's, yeah.
Yeah.
That's wild.
They love to pull them out. They're like, what? Yeah. Somebody's late on rent. Let's get them. Let's go.
Yeah.
So they run up at the Taco Bell. Guns blazing, they run up on Molly, and across from Molly was a man that Paul Nelson was all too familiar with, Clayton Daniels.
Jake Wayne Daniels.
Clayton Jake Wayne III Daniels Esquire. Yeah. Clayton was reportedly eating a burrito, and he looked at Paul Nelson mid-bite and said, "Oh fuck."
Oh man, we like know this guy. Like,
yeah.
Have you seen Red Rocket yet? I feel like I've recommended it to you like 900
I have
times.
Not. Yeah, I have
there's,
not.
There's a dude in Red Rocket named Lonnie. If anybody has seen the movie, and like as soon as I saw Lonnie in this movie, I was like, I know this guy. I know this guy from Texas. Like, I know Lonnie. And I was talking about this movie at a party in Austin, and this guy was like, oh yeah, I used to work at Hooters with the guy who played Lonnie. And I was like, yeah, that's him. Like, that is really him. Cause he's like an amateur actor that they found. And it's like, yeah, that dude worked at a Hooters. Anyway, yeah. Lonnie, this is like a Lonnie archetype to me. Like, I know this dude. I know him.
Yeah. Yeah. We all know Clayton. Oh fuck, dude. So they run
oh,
in.
Oh fuck, with a burrito in his mouth. Yeah. Getting spotted. Yep. Yep.
So they run in, and Clayton looked pretty good for a dead guy. He had sandy blonde hair, but his dyed black. But aside that,
he's in his emo phase. What are you going to
do? Yeah. This will be the day that I get raided at Taco Bell. So the couple was taken into custody, and the details of their scheme and some disturbing elements of their motive were soon revealed. So remember, there's a $110,000 insurance policy.
Yeah.
Molly had acknowledged that the $110,000 insurance payout was helpful, but ultimately wasn't the reason they did it. And this is where things get a little darker than normal. We've been saying that a lot lately. Sorry, guys. Episodes are just dark. Scams are getting darker. The world's spinning out of orbit and flying into the sun. Don't blame us. So according to Molly, the reason they did all this was to give Clayton a new life. And why did Clayton need a new life? Well, a few months before the incident, Clayton had been convicted, not charged, convicted of aggravated sexual assault of a child. The child being his own niece years earlier in 1996 when he was 16 years old.
I knew it. Don't let this guy wrestle your kid. This
exactly.
is a creep.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely. So he was only sentenced to fucking drum roll to throw up in disgust, 30 days in jail.
Wow. I guess because he was underage probably at the time.
Perhaps. I didn't think about that. But he was required to register for a sex offender for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
So which is how they tripped him up, how they got him was they interviewed him and he was like, they were like, yeah, this is what your niece is saying happened, you know, years ago. And he said, well, what does aggravated mean? What makes it aggravated? And the guy just lied. He said, oh, it means you beat her up when you did it.
Yeah.
And he goes, no.
And
he goes,
I didn't do that. I just had sex with her.
Yeah.
Clayton,
yeah,
you dumbass.
Yeah. That's a common tactic. My buddy right here on the wall one time, somebody owed him $20 and he said they owed him $20 for crack. And they're like, no, I owe him $20 for ecstasy. And he's like, ha ha.
Gotcha, bitch.
Yeah, gotcha, bitch. No, I don't smoke crack. I did ecstasy. Yeah, there you go. Boom.
That's interesting. Yeah. So he asked like define aggravated and they lied to him.
Yeah.
He was like, that isn't what I did. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't aggravated. So he was only sentenced 30 days. He had to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life. Now, as young parents who lived across the street from a school, this would totally have upended their life. He was supposed to stay home and watch their kids. Now he couldn't stay home and watch the kids. Now, I'm not trying to like shed sympathy on sex offenders here, but this fucked up everything. So I can kind of see that she's like, yeah, cool, we get $110,000. We're going to need that because we're giving him a new life like this. So I do believe her that it wasn't just let's do this to get some money.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, if you're like super close to the margins and it's like, okay, well now he has to move. Like we have to find a new place to live.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I think there's pros and cons to the sex offender registry for sure. And like, yeah, this, I, this totally tracks to me. And like, yeah, the money is a nice bonus to set this guy up with a new identity.
Yeah, but it was, yeah, even if the end of the rainbow wasn't $110,000, I would still imagine I would want to dodge my label as a sex offender.
Totally, like, yeah.
Like, well, there's no money? Yeah, I don't give a fuck. Let's just do this. Let's pull this thing off because I don't want to be labeled as a sex offender. So I do believe her when she says it wasn't just straight up insurance fraud.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So as to why Molly would go through all this trouble to help a convicted child rapist, she gave a defense that I don't think would sound out of place from a Leander resident today in 2023. She said, you know, I've always been the kind of person who takes all the information given to me and forms my own opinions.
Do your own research, girl. Do your own research on your child rapist boyfriend. Great.
I don't just believe the sex offender registry, okay? I get to know the man. I see how he interacts with my kids. You know, I leave him alone with my children and see if anything happens.
Right. Oh, my God. Yeah. This poor woman.
She said she forms her own opinions instead of just going with what I'm told was the full quote.
The sex offender registry. Great plan. Yeah. Great job.
So you're like, hey, you know he's a registered sex offender? I'm like, oh, so you just believe everything you read on the internet? Like, yeah, it's at texas.gov. Yeah, I fucking.
Right. Oh, my God.
So they begin to plot. Internet search records from her work and personal computers showed hundreds of Google searches for, like, straight up, like, how hot does it need to be to burn a body?
To fake death Reddit. Like.
Yeah. How to fake death Mexico, question mark? How to find a body was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
All of this was also coupled with plastic surgeon, Mexico. Mm-hmm. Dental surgery, Mexico. It was all, God bless them, in a folder labeled Mexico.
Nice.
So, just literally put it out there. So, yeah, but this is where it gets like all this shit sucks. Like, these are easily some of the shittiest people we've ever covered. Clayton said, also, you know what I just thought about? Everybody knew this dude got popped for fucking assaulting his niece, and they still played Freebird at his fucking funeral.
Yeah, like his family.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have been like, play the worst song of all time. Play fucking Macarena. Like, don't give this guy Freebird, you know? Like,
yeah.
And this bird is not 18. Sorry. So for the plan to work, they needed a body. Mm-hmm. And Clayton said he knew just the spot. It was a rural cemetery outside of Burnett called Pebble Mound. And he used to pass it on his way to work at an old job. It's not clear if they knew this, but for decades, Pebble Mound Cemetery had been used to house indigent burials. Mm-hmm. A cemetery for people with no family who couldn't afford a burial plot. What's colloquially known as a pauper's grave. Mm-hmm. And that was what this place was. So they did their research. They knew they had to pick a fresher corpse. It had to be somewhat newer. And so they went for one near the entrance. I don't know what he was just like. Yeah, man, they stack them in from the back. You know, so we'll just get one right near the gate.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it sounds like it worked for a while. I feel like I would case the joint and keep an eye on when there was a new one. But yeah. I guess they just were like, let's go toward the front.
Yeah,
it's like a line.
It couldn't be too new, though, because I guess there was like too new. Then you have all like the embalming material,
formaldehyde and stuff. That's interesting. That's interesting.
So they got one. It was the body they chose was an 81-year-old woman who had died 2 years earlier in 2003. And this is the part that got me. Her name was Charlotte Davis, and although she lived most of her life wheelchair bound in group homes, and suffered from a mental handicap, she was still very full of life, and she was a social person, and everybody like she was described as fundamentally happy. She was a happy person, and she had become very close with her caretaker Laura Lovelace, who during the interview. You hear people cry in interviews. This woman was like day of bawling, like in the interview. Couldn't even fucking keep it together. She got very close with her, and she bought her a brand new dress for her burial and got a donated grave close to the cemetery gate because she said she liked to still be in the mix, and she was like a little nosy lady and she'd be in everybody's business. So they were like, they put her under a live oak tree by the cemetery gate so she could see everybody coming and going, and she could still be in the mix.
Keep up on things.
That's very sad. I have such a soft spot for the elderly. I like, when I was a salesman, they'd be like, hey, Pat, you got to turn and burn, talk to new customers. And I'm like, I have to teach this 81-year-old woman how to use an iPhone, and you're going to give me 4 hours, and none of us are going to say anything fucking about this. So, yeah, that was the part that got me. This is a very sad part, and honestly, fuck these people to death. Also because in a somehow even more heartbreaking twist, her only wish of her death was to not be cremated.
Motherfucker.
Yeah.
God damn it. That's these assholes.
These fucking cowards and assholes. Like, it really, that's like a really shitty part. Just not to be cremated. Also, completely conjecture, maybe just like reaching, but I can imagine someone who, has a mental disability, I can see maybe that she's like, I don't want you to burn my body. That's scary. You know, like, what if she was just scared of, like, that's so sad to me. So, Clayton Daniels was charged with arson, insurance fraud, and desecration of a cemetery. He was sentenced to 45 years on top of the 20 he was going to serve for violating his probation for the sexual assault charge. Because he was on probation for a sexual assault charge when he fucking morphed into Jake. You know? So, like, and
that's definitely a violation of probation to do all this stuff. You're not allowed to do that. You will. You'll be in trouble.
Fucking Dick and Shites flipping through the pages. He's like, it's in here somewhere. Hold on. Don't move. This is definitely a rule. We definitely made a rule about this. I did write this a little like half in the bag. Hopefully he dies in prison. I usually try to keep my opinions out of the script, but yeah, hopefully he dies.
So he's
in prison.
Still there. He's still
there.
Prison.
Still in jail.
Yeah. Fuck this guy.
Molly Daniels was charged with insurance fraud. This was fucked up. Is he seems like he's a horrible person. He's an idiot, but he's definitely not the brains of the operation. And it seems like he was just like, all right, yeah, I'll go fucking do that. And he clearly had no problem with it, so fuck him to death.
He basically didn't deserve this woman, is what it sounds like.
This woman did way too much work for him, you know? And like when they ask her friends, again, her shitty Leander friends, they're like, what do you think she saw in him? And she was like, you know, I think it was just the first guy that ever paid any attention to her.
My God, these mean friends. That sucks.
They're like, she doesn't even go here. it is kind of shitty. Molly is a very plain woman. Not a lot of frills on Molly's face. I could see that, you know, she's like this dude, this fucking reckless, ne'er-do-well, fucking devil without a cause who's a registered sex offender, you know. I guess she thought that was hot. But she was given 20 years for insurance fraud, which was tech, because he did all the dirty work.
Right. She came up with the idea and was in cahoots, but he did all
the only thing I can think she did was drive him out there, because I forgot to mention, after he set the car on fire, he fled on a motorcycle that had been previously stashed out there.
So she probably
drove him to stash the motorcycle. So she got insurance fraud and she was sentenced to 20 years. Jurors expressed regret that they couldn't give her more time for the pain that she caused her kids, you know, because like her son's like, he's fucking pissing on walls, beating up his classmates, you know, because
he's got some issues.
Yeah. And Molly sucks, and she gives very conditional apologies in interviews. She's one of those people, like, so when confronted with, you desecrated a corpse, the lady's caretaker said she buried her in the new dress because she wanted the world to know that someone cared about her.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't want anybody to think nobody cared about this lady in a pauper's grave. Yeah. So she said, she was like, you know, they say I desecrated a corpse, and all these people, this is for Molly, she said, they all claim to be God-fearing Christians, so if they're Christians, they know she's in heaven, and that was just her body. It's like, yeah, get fucked,
God
lady.
Would
like,
be totally cool with me stealing this woman's body to do insurance fraud for my shitty husband. Yeah, that's wild.
God is looking at y'all like y'all are so weird. Like, so, yeah, she said that. The one of the interviewers was like, but, you know, when people dedicate time to a ritual for their loved one's body, they assume it's going to stay in the ground. And she was like, well, that's your opinion. So
she's doing her own research. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all your opinion.
when they were yeah, exactly. I believe, you know, I believe COVID is a myth and that I can pray it away, and you know, like that's just as valid. So she, they would said that we're like, hey, you know, a lot of the jurors said they wish they could give you more time because of the pain you caused your kids. She said that's ridiculous. She's like, you can look it up. My crime is not against my son. My crime is insurance fraud. And it's like, okay, yeah. They'd be like,
this is an unrepentant asshole. Yeah.
My crime isn't hitting somebody with my car. My crime is drunk driving. You know, it's like, right. Yeah, well, you did that. That happened because you did that.
Now your
kids
have no parents, you fucking idiot.
Yeah, you fucking dumbass. Also, they're like, what about when the community rallied together and got all your fucking, all this bill money together for you? She said, I never asked them to do that. I didn't ask them to do that. Just like you, yeah, like these are just some of the worst people we've ever covered. And then so she is good news. She's back on the street. She was released in 2016.
Oh, wow. So she's still out there in Leander.
Yeah, she's out there in Leander. You know, like definitely, you know, she's like the pseudo Casey Anthony kind of, I guess, maybe. I wonder if she's ever been at a show. I do a lot of shows in North Central Texas.
Yeah, possible.
Yeah. So they said her kids went into the custody of her sister, who's taking care of them, who said she has not forgiven Molly for what she did to the kids, and then also said that one time she got a new haircut, and fucking kid Caleb freaked out. He didn't like that. He didn't like that she had new hair. Don't change your hair. How can you just change your hair like that? You know, because he had to watch his dad put fucking shoe polish in his head.
Yeah.
You know,
and like, oh my God. Yeah, that sucks. This poor kid.
Charlotte's remains were returned to her grave in Pebble Mound. There she stays, under the live oak, next to the entrance.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Charlotte. That is, that's that story. Worth it? -10,000% no.
Yeah, really? Fuck these people. Yeah. These are assholes. Thumbs down. Do not do all of this to save a sex offender. Fuck them. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't like
that is it's a fascinating story though. I'm glad you did this one, even though I hate these people. This is wild.
It's so crazy because I'm like, damn, this happened right down the road. Like this is like
I never heard about this.
Yeah, 50 minutes from my house. And I remember like where I was out in the world this time. I was out of high school. Like I was surprised I did not hear about this. But this also like you literally saw the news on the news and that was it. You know, there was no phones like that. Yeah. And I was not paying attention to the news. The one upside on this, at least for Clayton, is that there is a far greater than 0% chance, like probably a 60% chance, he's doing time with somebody I know, and I just know those. I hope I hope he's gotten smacked around a little bit in there, because you know, fuck that guy. Like when you hear this story, how do you not just be like, well, I'm gonna cash out of this domino game and beat the hell out of you like with a piece of my bed that I broke off. So I hope that happened. Totally not worth it. That being said, guys, if you liked what you heard, we do 2 more episodes a month on our Patreon, patreon.com/liecheatandsteal. We are on TikTok at Lie, Cheat, Steal Podcast, and we're on Twitter at LCS Podcast. And I am going to start running a monthly show at the newly founded South Austin Comedy Club. It's going to be monthly. It's called Saturday Pint Live. And we're doing the first one on July 8th, and Rochelle McConico is headlining. It's going to be really fun, and you should come out. Kaz, what do you got for us?
I have a monthly show called Paid Protest. We do a fundraiser for a different DSA working group every month. Our next one is July 7th. I believe it's at 8. That one is at the Silo, which is 90 Scott Ave in Bushwick, if you live in New York City. I also have some travel dates. If you live in upstate New York, I'm doing a show in Teresa, New York. I think the weekend this comes out. It's the weekend of the 16th, so come to that.
Hell yeah.
Everything else, I'm on Twitter at Kath Barbadoro. I have a Substack. I have another podcast called What a Time to Be Alive. Check all that stuff out. Thank you so much for listening, everybody.
Yeah, guys, thank you for listening. Thanks for tuning in. I hope everybody's summer is going great. Get out there. Enjoy it. Be safe. Be smart. But above all, don't get caught.
Don't get caught. See you next time.